Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Playing and Reality is a major work of psychoanalytic theory by D.W. Winnicott, the British pediatrician and psychoanalyst, whose ideas reshaped understandings of childhood, creativity, and the therapeutic relationship. First published in 1971, the book gathers and develops several of his most influential concepts, including transitional objects, potential space, playing, and the conditions that allow a person to experience life as personally meaningful rather than merely compliant. Although grounded in clinical observation of infants, children, and adults, the book extends beyond child development into art, religion, culture, and psychotherapy. Its central purpose is to explain how the self emerges through a delicate relation between inner imagination and external reality. Winnicott argues that play is not a trivial activity but a basic mode of being, one through which individuals discover themselves, relate to others, and participate in culture. The book is theoretical, compact, and sometimes difficult, but it remains foundational in psychoanalysis and developmental psychology. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, potential space as the meeting point between inner life and external reality. One of the central ideas in playing and reality is potential space, the intermediate area of experience between subjective inner reality and the objectively shared world. Winnicott is not simply describing imagination, fantasy, or external perception. He is identifying a zone in which the child, and later the adult, can relate to reality without either being overwhelmed by it or retreating entirely into private fantasy. This space is created gradually through reliable caregiving, especially when the infant can begin to experience separation without losing the sense of continuity and safety. Potential space matters because it explains how creative experience becomes possible. A person can try out meanings, gestures, symbols, and relationships without treating them as either entirely invented or rigidly imposed. In this view, psychological health does not consist in abandoning illusion too quickly. Rather, healthy development depends on an environment that allows illusion, play, and gradual disillusionment to coexist. The concept also gives Winnicott a bridge between infancy and adult culture, since artistic, religious, and intellectual life all depend on this same intermediate field. Secondly, transitional objects and the gradual movement from merger to separateness. Winnicott begins from the familiar phenomenon of the infant attachment to a blanket, cloth, toy, or similar object, but he gives it a distinctive psychoanalytic interpretation. The transitional object is important because it belongs to a paradoxical zone. It is neither simply part of the child, nor merely an external object in the ordinary adult sense. The child treats it as deeply personal, while also encountering it as something outside the body and outside complete control. This helps the infant manage the move from early dependence, in which the mother or caregiver may feel almost indistinguishable from the self, toward recognition of a separate external world. Winnicott emphasizes that this transition should not be forced by crude correction, because the value of the object lies in the tolerated paradox. The caregiver does not need to ask whether the object was created by the child or found in the world. By allowing that ambiguity, the environment supports the growth of trust, symbol formation, and emotional continuity. Transitional phenomena, therefore, become the earliest form of cultural experience, preparing the way for later symbolic life. Thirdly, playing as the foundation of creativity, self-discovery, and psychological vitality. For Winnicott, playing is not the same as games, entertainment, or rule-bound activity. It is a spontaneous, absorbed form of experience in which the whole personality can become involved. This distinction is crucial because the book treats play as a condition for creativity rather than as a childish diversion. A person discovers the self through activity that is neither merely obedient to external demands nor cut off from reality. Play allows experimentation without premature judgment, and it permits the individual to feel that actions arise from the living self rather than from compliance. Winnicott therefore links the ability to play with the ability to live creatively. Creativity here does not refer only to producing works of art. It means experiencing ordinary life as personally real, animated, and connected to one's own gesture. The opposite condition is not lack of talent, but a compliant relation to reality, where life is managed mechanically and without inner participation. This makes play a diagnostic and ethical concept in the book, since the capacity to play indicates a basic form of psychological health. Fourthly, good enough caregiving and the conditions that make authentic experience possible. Winnicott repeatedly connects the capacity for play with the quality of the early environment. His well-known idea of the good enough mother does not describe perfection, but a caregiver who can adapt sensitively enough to the infant at first and then gradually allow frustration, separation, and reality testing to emerge. The timing is important. If reality is imposed too abruptly, the infant may become defensive or compliant. If adaptation never loosens, separateness cannot develop. The good enough environment provides holding, reliability, and non-intrusive presence, making it possible for the child to feel continuous in existence. Playing in reality also includes the mirror role of the mother and family, where the child begins to see something of the self reflected in the caregiver response. This is not merely visual mirroring, but emotional recognition. When the environment responds without distortion or excessive intrusion, the infant can experience personal gestures as meaningful. When it fails severely, the child may organize around adaptation to others rather than spontaneous expression. Winnicott thus places early relational experience at the center of later creativity and selfhood. Lastly, psychotherapy and culture as extensions of shared play. Playing and reality give psychotherapy a distinctive aim the therapist and patient must be able to meet in an area of play. Winnicott does not reduce treatment to interpretation alone. Interpretation may be useful, but only when a potential space has been established in which the patient can risk spontaneous experience. If the patient cannot play, the therapist's task is not to demand insight immediately, but to help restore the conditions for play. This clinical idea follows directly from the developmental theory. Healing requires a reliable frame that is neither intrusive nor absent, allowing the patient to discover gestures, feelings, and meanings as personally real. Winnicott extends the same logic to culture. Art, religion, and imaginative life are not treated as escapes from reality, but as adult forms of transitional experience. They occupy a shared yet personal space, where meaning is created and found at the same time. This explains the unusual breadth of the book. It moves from infants and toys to psychoanalytic technique and cultural life because all these areas depend on the same intermediate field of experience. In conclusion, Playing and Reality is best suited to readers interested in psychoanalysis, developmental psychology, psychotherapy, child development, creativity, and the psychological foundations of culture. Clinicians can benefit from its account of the therapeutic setting as a space where spontaneous experience can emerge, especially when working with patients whose lives are organized around compliance, defensiveness, or difficulty playing. Educators, artists, and scholars of culture may also find it valuable because Winnicott treats creativity as a basic human capacity rather than a specialized artistic achievement. The book is not a practical manual, and readers looking for step-by-step therapeutic techniques may find its style indirect and conceptually dense. Its benefit is different. It supplies a framework for thinking about how people come to feel real, how symbolic life develops, and why play remains central beyond childhood. Compared with more systematic psychology texts, it stands out for linking infant observation, clinical practice, and cultural experience in one argument. Compared with many psychoanalytic works focused mainly on conflict, drive, or interpretation, Winnicott gives unusual emphasis to environment, play, and the fragile conditions that allow the self to become creative. That combination explains its lasting influence. If you would like to support D.W. Winnicott, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.